favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
This is good. The only thing that brought me any joy in that entire experience was fucking Carrie Fisher's cameo in Scream 3.
That was a good cameo. That was a goddamn good cameo, though. Oh. Oh.
Okay.
Are we ready? Recording? Are we good?
Yes.
Oh. Jeez. Hey.
Bringing it in with my depression.
Well, yeah, with your depression and my...
mania?
My manic behavior lately, yes. The Manic Depressive Podcast about scary shit. Yay!
Welcome back, everyone, to the Horrible People's Podcast, the Manic Depressive Podcast about scary shit.
We're not talking about the movies either. This behind the scenes for this one's fucking horrible.
I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
Hey, drinking wine.
We are drinking wine.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be fun.
Yeah, you got red wine, I got white wine.
Mm-hmm. Ebony and ivory.
That's right. That's right, I am brown, we're good.
So today, dear listeners, we've been, I mean, really, how to even introduce this?
I mean, we do an installment of this series once a year. It's year three, and at some point, diminishing returns is a thing.
And
so,
we hit it.
Yeah. No, not us as a podcast, but for sure this movie.
No.
I think we're doing great.
We're doing great. Me mentally, maybe.
Yeah. No. It's been a crazy first January, first couple of weeks. Is it 2 weeks yet?
Yeah, this is the second week of January.
Oh, it's officially... Oh, my fucking God. Yeah.
We are going into the latter half of January.
Bitch ass fucking holy shit.
Yeah.
I can't even compute things. But yeah, you know, despite the chaos, we decided to bring you another bit of chaos in what we know as Scream 3.
Boop, 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 boop.
Yes, which the first two are among our more popular episodes. So
good.
Yeah.
So fun.
And among the most popular in the series and most popular slashers. So yeah, fun times ahead. Just so you know, listeners, this is going to be a weird... I know we're talking about Scream 3. We're going to talk a lot of shit later. It's going to be great. We also cover school shootings and predatory sexual abuse. So...
Yay.
Hey, it's about Hollywood.
Yay.
Yeah. And the late 90s. So... Those are big things. So prepare yourself for that part of the conversation.
I'm glad I started drinking before you got here.
Yeah, it definitely affected the making of this film, which we're going to get into. But,
okay.
Speaking of wine, I'm sure somebody was on a lot of booze when they wrote these things. IMDb synopsis, let's go. So, while Sydney and her friends visit the Hollywood set of Stab 3, the third film based on the Woodsboro murders, another Ghostface killer rises to terrorize them. It's simple.
Sure, that's the movie.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't give... There's nothing clever about the thingy, you know.
Is there ever?
No, there never is. This was written by... I don't know how to say this name. Eren Kruger. Very, very interesting last name for working with director Wes Craven, clearly.
Right.
So, yeah, directed by Wes Craven. This has a big-ass cast.
Oh, my God.
It is.
Every time, I haven't seen this movie in forever, so as I was watching it, I'm like, hey, isn't that...
Yeah.
Hey, isn't that...
Right? No, it's a big one. So, I mean, it's set in Los Angeles, so obviously...
They gotta get the movie stars.
They gotta get some movie stars, yes. So, this is starring David Arquette, Neve Campbell, Courtney Cox Arquette at the time, Patrick Dempsey, Scott Foley, Lance Henriksen, Matt Kessler, Jenny McCarthy, Emily Mortimer, Parker Posey, who's fucking great in this. I love her fucking character so much. Dion Richmond and Patrick Warburton. Damn, that is a... Oh.
It's a real who's who.
It's a real who's who. I forgot to put their name in there, but they're in here so briefly. Liev Schreiber.
Liev
Schreiber is also...
Carrie Fisher,
Jason Mewes, and Kevin Smith. Yeah.
Did I miss them?
You missed the Jay and Silent Bob cameo?
No!
Were you just crying into your pillow at the time? What the fuck was going on with something? I'm sorry.
Bitch, I have depression. I will fucking kill you.
I like how you like how I looked in your eyes when I said it. Let's drink it. Let's go. Oh, that's delicious.
I miss the Jay and Silent Bob karaoke. You
miss
the
yeah. You, it's literally the blink and you miss it though. Like they have like a line each, and that's it. Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Yeah, it's on YouTube, I'm sure. This one was budgeted at much more than the first two, a full $40 million, because you got to pay for that cast.
Yeah.
You got to pay for that cast.
You got to be able to pay. I mean, given, like, this is Patrick Dempsey, like, pre-Grey's Anatomy. This is, like, before he was McDreamy or whatever the fuck.
Oh, see, that is where he's known from, huh?
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, I'm just, to me, he's always just Patrick Dempsey.
It's like, Patrick Dempsey from, like, the rom-com circuit and, like, Transformers Grey's Anatomy. No, like, it's Grey's Anatomy. Like, I was just like, that's, McSteamy.
Like, he does look like a movie star, though. Patrick Dempsey, he's got that, like...
He has, like, the chiseled jaw, like, yeah.
But he's, like, not like a shitty one. He can act, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, this one was released on... Not October, February 3rd, 2000. Probably a bad fucking idea. And it made...
Happy Valentine's Day. Yeah, go see Scream Day.
Oh, my God. But it did make a lot of money. Not as much as it's the predecessors, obviously. But $161.8 million. It's not that bad.
I initially read that as $16 million. I'm like, oh, my fucking God.
Oh, no.
God.
That would have been... we would not have seen a Scream 4. We would not have seen a Scream 4.
Oh, or a TV show. No. It would have been the death of everything.
Death of a franchise. That's right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah.
Jesus. But it was for like a decade, though. But
yeah,
you know,
we didn't get to Scream 4 for a while.
Yeah, but obviously we'll get into why that is right now. Right now, we're gonna do it.
Right now?
Yeah, let's do
right
it.
Right this second?
Because you gotta talk about it.
So, as explored in our previous episodes, Scream and Scream 2 were kind of a big deal. You might have heard of them.
A little bit. We have covered how many Kevin Williamson's films now?
27.
Yeah, a lot. Maybe his entire output, but yeah, let's see.
Both films, to this day, are among the highest grossing slashers in history. Yeah. And the success of Kevin Williamson's other works, along with Scream 1 and 2, meant the screenwriter was involved with a lot of projects.
Oh, yeah.
Plus, his passion project, Teaching Mrs. Tingle, was finally out of development hell.
And we talk a lot of shit on our first episode about Scream, about this particular
about
movie.
About this particular thing. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, if you want to go back and experience the trilogy from our perspective.
Oh, wow.
We got episodes, baby. Yeah, we do.
Oh, my gosh. Scream was also episode, like, what, 10?
14, I think.
Oh, yeah.
It was up there, yeah.
Like, super, like, it's way back there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. So, early on, Williamson wrote pitches for three total Scream films when he was trying to get the first one off the ground. And now it was his time to step up, which he didn't.
No. I always love when that happens. Like, oh, wow, you have big... yeah, you know what? I'm actually making a lot of money now, so I don't need to worry about this.
which is like, so fucked up, because Scream is the movie that literally saved him from starving.
I mean, keep reading. He's not entirely ungrateful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because he was juggling so many projects, Williamson couldn't give Scream 3 the full attention needed to write a complete screenplay, even if the Weinsteins insisted on parking trucks full of money into his fancy LA garage.
Mm-hmm. And you know they like to park trucks full of money.
Williamson chose to write a 20-30-page outline that the creative team could use to develop a third film while they searched for a screenwriter that could flesh it out properly.
Mm-hmm.
In an interview, William stated, quote, "In my original story for Scream 3, the killers were basically a fan club of Woodsboro kids that had formed because of Stab 1 and Stab 2. They were all doing the killings, and the big surprise of the movie was when Sydney walked into the house after Ghostface had killed everyone, and they all rose up. None of them were actually dead, and they planned the whole thing," unquote.
Yeah, that would have been interesting.
See, you can kind of see that set up as, like, I thought, like, the actors... Mm-hmm. Like, we're kind of like that little fan club type of deal. Like, I thought they were going to be the ones who did it, but whatever.
I mean, there's kind of elements of, I guess, a little bit, but then also...
The
like,
essence of it?
Yeah, like it's in the DNA, clearly. But just so you guys know also, this outline, I believe, is available. I don't know if it's, like, easy to track, but it has popped up here and there.
Ah.
So, yeah, it's if you want, like, a better, in Williamson's own words... Do some sleuthing. I'm pretty sure you can find it. Yeah.
Okay, do some internet sleuthing. What is this, 1997?
See our Scream 2 episode for that.
So, in this version, Matthew Lillard His character, Stu, was set to return as the ringleader of the murderous fan club, having survived a TV crushing his skull.
Yeah.
Which would have been so fucking good.
Which would have is a retcon that would have made more sense than Sydney's mom going to Los Angeles.
Right?
Yeah. She was an actor and a slut. Jesus. I know. It's a slut-shaming film. I'm sorry.
It is.
It's a series. Definitely is.
As most slashers are.
Yeah, that's true.
You very, fucking very true. Whores.
Very true. I'm not saying I agree with it, but that's definitely the tone.
Yeah. It's there. So Williamson felt the theme of fame seeking was the natural conclusion to the series and had hoped for their newest hire, Erin Kruger, could pull it off. He had only been in the industry for 2 years, but likely had that special combo of inexperience and talent that the Weinsteins loved to exploit so much.
Yeah. He doesn't know anything, and he can write above averagely. Let's hire him for, like, scale.
That and the new writer's eagerness to work with Wes Craven made him an obvious choice. I mean, who wouldn't at this point, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things from the interview I read with him was, like, a big motivator. He's like, he didn't feel like he was competent enough to really handle it, but mm-hmm. he's like, I get the opportunity to work with Wes Craven, so I'm gonna fucking sign up for this and hope I pull it off.
And if I do it, I do it.
Yeah, yeah. It's just very interesting how that
kind of like
story
starting this
out.
Podcast. Yeah. If it works, it works.
If it works, it works. 3 years, baby.
So Scream 1 and 2 managed to avoid being harshly affected by the spotlight of violence in the media to this point, if narrowly.
Oh, yeah.
But as plans for the third installment were coming together, something huge shook up America and shook up American society in a way that we still haven't quite recovered from.
We'll never recover from it, even in
the year of our Lord 2021.
Nope.
And it was about to fuck with the whole production of Scream 3.
Yeah, the whole $40 million right there.
Ooh.
Yeah, holy shit. So, I'm going to be a little serious here. On April 20th, 1999, maybe not that serious, two students who we'll refer to as Eric Fuckface and Dylan Cuckboy.
Jesus Christ, Anthony.
Brought some hastily made bombs, along with a set of 9mm handguns and some shotguns, to their campus in Columbine, Colorado. This event was planned for a whole year prior, actually. And though it didn't go exactly as intended, Fuckface and Cuckboy managed to fire 183 rounds of ammunition throughout the campus. An act that resulted in 12 dead students, one dead faculty member, and the suicides of the cowardice, bitch-ass, stupid fuck perpetrators.
Yeah.
I hate them.
I can tell.
At the time.
So
specify at the time, yes.
So you were in what, middle school?
I can't remember. I just remember seeing the news coverage live.
Okay.
I definitely saw this live.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, at the time, this was the deadliest school shooting in American history. A record that sadly would not last all that long. No, it definitely didn't.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. The tragedy was like nothing the nation had ever actually seen before, especially in the age of media. And the result of this was a frenzy with said media looking for an outlet to blame. It just so happened that these two fuckheads, like many teenagers, happened to indulge in movies and music from time to time. Who knew? Who knew they liked that shit?
Oh my gosh. So if you want like a really in-depth, like, breakdown.
Play-by-play kind play of fucking play breakdown,
of this,
yeah.
Like, I cannot recommend the Last Podcast on the Left series on Columbine enough. They did a two-parter.
They did so good.
They did. It was a really great two-parter about Columbine and kind of like what they were into. And it was just like what, like about the whole like mindset of a school shooter mm-hmm. and how there isn't really one and like all this stuff. It was
a lot
great.
Of details of why the media was fucking stupid around this time for sure.
And this is the event that weaponized goths.
Yes. Yes, it did.
That made goths like some big scary like when really all we do is sit on our couch, eat M&M's, and drink wine.
it made the goth girls hotter, I gotta say. Yeah. Like, mom will not approve of them.
They're moderately dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the nets around the legs and all the good stuff. So.
The nets around the legs?
Whatever.
You sound like an old man.
Oh, it's so pretty.
It's kind of sexy.
It's no teeth. God damn it. But, of course, because of this, a big, big, fat, stupid, ugly lens was put on the entertainment industry as a whole. And the Weinsteins didn't want their cash cow to suddenly stop printing money. especially as this third installment was set in a small town where teenagers would be, you know, murdering the fuck out of each other.
Yeah,
not the best time for that. The producers soon mandated a complete rewrite, which would set the location in Los Angeles instead of Woodsboro, along with only full-grown adults receiving the occasional fatal stabbing and an explosion, because it's fucking Hollywood.
And we need to see some shit blow up.
Well, we're in L.A., so
might as well.
The tone was also mandated to be much more humorous, deviating even further from the franchise's horror roots.
Yeah, this is Scary Movie 1.5.
Scooby-Doo, I think, is a good apt kind of
yeah.
Thing. Yeah, yeah. These changes and pressure to get the film made in a reasonable amount of time greatly stressed writer Aaron Kruger to the point where his characterizations of the main cast actually were seen as completely off base and needed a lot of help. But thankfully, he had the master of horror, Wes fucking Craven, around to shepherd him through the process. And it was a big fucking process. But again, we got more to tell. So Alex, what the fuck happened here?
Okay, so because of the success of the previous two installments, the cast for Scream was starting to get very famous, especially for the 90s.
They were 90s as fuck famous, dude. Like,
yeah.
For real.
Say hi to Bowie.
Hey, Bowie.
Hell, even Craven himself didn't want to return, but was able to negotiate it if the Weinsteins produced his passion project. A non-horror film that would absolutely flop in the future. It wasn't the best time in his career.
Not the best time for his career.
His heyday.
Mm-mm.
So, Neve Campbell, Liev Schreiber, David Arquette, and Courtney Cox all agreed to return, but their shooting time was significantly limited, with Campbell only having 20 days available to film, resulting in her role being shaved down considerably.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I noticed. I was like, she is, like, barely in this fucking movie.
She's like a cameo, essentially. They're like, yeah, we can sprinkle her here and there.
Right.
That's good.
Lynn McCree would finally get a chance to portray Maureen Prescott, as she had only appeared in photos prior, and this time she was going to be a hallucination.
Yeah, you're like, okay, be a ghost and moany and weird. You can act a little bit, right? Yeah.
Be moany and weird.
Yeah.
Title of my autobiography.
That's good. Okay, yeah. Moany and weird, the Alex Webster story.
Roger L. Jackson returned as the voice of Ghostface, and they even managed to get Jamie Kennedy back for a cameo role, mostly because the backlash for his character Randy's death was huge.
Yeah, people were pissed.
And they wrote that shit into the movie also.
Mm-hmm.
The team toyed with him surviving the slaughter from Scream 2, but realized all their plans to do so were extremely unrealistic.
What we saw was the most realistic version of what they could do.
It's true, and I'm just like, when something's considered unrealistic for a horror film, a slasher film, then you know that they were coming up with some crazy shit.
Oh my god, they so were. They so were.
This movie also required actors to portray actors, detectives, and sleazy executives. Oh, and the killer. because of the high pedigree the franchise had established for itself, this resulted in big casting choices like Parker Posey, Jenny McCarthy, Patrick Dempsey, Patrick Warburton, and Scott Foley. The last of which would play the true murderer.
And the most disappointing reveal in the entire franchise.
Stupid. cameos by Kevin Smith, Jason Mewes, and Carrie Fisher were also secured, with each referencing a role that had previously made them famous.
In the case of Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes, the exact role that made them famous.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's produced by Miramax.
And Dimension.
Yeah, exactly.
It was like, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
This cost them nothing.
This also, just like, in case you forgot, I would live and die for Kevin Smith. I fucking love the man.
God, yeah, exactly. Mm-mm.
Anyway, unfortunately, the rewrite meant that Matthew Lillard could not participate in the film, despite being approached to do so early in development.
He was so sad.
I would be too.
They talked to him about it. They're like, hey, buddy. You're gonna be like the boy now. You're gonna be the big hit. It's like, oh my god, cool! I get more money. And then
they're like, just kidding.
Hey, by the way, a bunch of people got shot, so you're gonna chill.
Yeah. So disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
So now that the team had a cast and a finished, unfinished.
Oh yeah, I know how we always say that, but it's not the case. Not the case.
The team was ready to start filming Scream 3 because, you know, dollar signs.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They're like, no, people are forgetting. We need to bring this fast.
Quick, with a quickness. Not unlike the difference between Scream 1 and Scream 2.
Oh, that was much faster.
Where Scream 2 was in production while Scream 1 was still in theaters.
See our episode on Scream 2 for that season 2 premiere, baby. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, with a $40 million budget, 12 weeks to shoot, and a script undergoing constant day-to-day, to-day-to-the-hour rewrites, so much so that it even received its own scene that referenced it in the finished film.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, that's because of what was going on. But all in all...
Another goddamn rewrite!
Yep, that was it. This is our way of saying putting together Scream 3 was just not fucking easy. Yeah. It was not an easy time. So the film was shot up and down Los Angeles, including locations like Beverly Hills, West Hollywood, Studio City, and a classroom in UCLA. They went all over the place with that one.
Mm-hmm. They went, yeah, I mean...
So the opening scene involving Liev Schreiber meeting his doom was being changed so unbelievable, like a lot, so much, that even the context of his phone conversations were revamped completely in post. The scene had to be reshot. A live girlfriend had to be cast instead of a dead one at the apartment, which, by the way, she didn't have all her papers, so they had to fly her to Canada to get the right permits and fly her back in time to shoot the scene.
Ah, the Weinsteins.
Clusterfuck. Yeah, of course. And a fight scene actually had to be completely reworked because it made Ghostface appear like a little bitch initially, and they wanted him to, like, be a killer. Yeah.
I guess.
How do you fight Liev Schreiber, though? Like, it's that motherfucker, he's like he'll punch the shit out of you.
Yeah, he's like, yeah. I mean, you know.
Although
played Sabretooth in that really shitty movie, yeah, but he still played Sabretooth.
But if he was, like, in the first X-Men, Jesus.
Would have been good.
That would have been good, yeah. Yeah, he was a very good Sabretooth. He just happened to be in a very shitty movie. Yes, I agree.
We'll talk about superhero movies one day.
We're going to talk about trilogies later on, so that's going to be good. But yeah, and they also actually, in this particular scene, I didn't say, they actually lost access to the set that they initially used for the earlier scene, so they had to reshoot around that.
Too. That apartment, by the way, was so Los Angeles.
It was LA as fuck, dude. I've been in apartments like that.
I know, I was going to say, I was just like, oh God. Yep. I was looking at, like, Hot Pads apartments that look like that.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. It's so funny. It's true. Yeah, it's LA
very,
as fuck.
Like, this movie's very LA.
It's so LA. We're going to talk about that, too. But of course, Wes Craven knew... he actually also wanted to return to the original Woodsboro set in some way. Not, again, unfinished screenplay, so he didn't actually know how. So he actually had the sets rebuilt on the off chance he found a way to utilize them. He did, and it resulted in even more reshoots and rewrites in order to maintain continuity with scenes earlier in the film. So... yeah, he's like, just commission it. We'll figure out a way to insert it. They shot the scene. They're like, oh, actually, this makes no fucking sense.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, let's add some shit. Yeah. So things got so bad that the team would shoot multiple versions of each scene with a lot of different varying footage.
Oh, my God.
All based on different rewrites that allowed the team to select which directions to take the story. Because... this is $40 million, Alex.
They have the money.
Mm-hmm. Everybody wants to think. I've worked for a $1 billion company before. Now, what you got to remember is everybody thinks billionaires are efficient and all these like job makers and
they don't know shit about shit.
they like, hey, let's throw resources at the problem and then let's figure out. Sticks. Yeah. Let's hope, like, that I hired a competent enough person to make it work. That's it.
Working for insanely rich people opened my eyes to so much shit. Like, I'm like, oh, you're smart. You made this much money.
Nope. I worked in Beverly Hills, baby. I'm telling you, but some of the dumbest motherfuckers have been business owners in Beverly Hills. But, you know, that's not to say they all didn't build themselves up. Like, two or three of them did. A lot of them inherited that money. Just saying. Inherited wealth results in some really stupid ass fucking people.
Inherited wealth.
I'm telling you, and that's probably the. Can't confirm, but when I see people throwing resources to fix a problem instead of having a plan to fix a problem,
instead of having like a streamlined, well thought out. Because also, here's my problem, and I'm so sorry to digress here, but I just we both work in a particular industry that's particularly.
Oh, I have a good job. I have a good job now, though. So, yes. But prior to this, yes.
Yes, you
I
have remember. A great job yes, right now. Yeah. But no, I mean, just like working in like in where it's like when the super rich person like doesn't understand how anything works mm-hmm. ever. Mm-hmm. Like when they're just like, oh, make this ad for this and make it like, and it's completely unrealistic.
And I want it to hit these numbers.
Yeah, and yeah. It's just like that, sir. That's not how the internet works.
Yeah, that what you're asking for is a miracle, which would be
I'm
nice.
Good. I'm good. I'm not that fucking good.
Yeah. Everybody wants to tell you that rich people are these job creators smart. Well, of course they got their... Guys, they're humans. And lots of humans. 50% of humans, at least. I always remember the George Carlin quote. Think about how smart the average person is. Half of those people are dumber than that. A lot of those people also have money. Just so you know.
A lot of those people also have millions upon millions of dollars just to chuck
yeah.
at whatever business opportunity. I could talk about this forever. Please
yeah,
continue.
Yeah, no, our soapbox went a little hard on that one. But it's been a frustrating week. So I'll paste, of course. You know, even the video with Randy Meeks, which was a 3-minute scene, took 2 hours of footage to work with. So that's not clearly how they shot it, but they had 2 hours of different story bits.
He did like 2 takes, or he did 2 hours worth of
different takes through? And variations and writing, rewrites and all the shit. So 2 hours so they can kind of figure out how to do it.
Honestly, that was the most memorable part of the movie
for me. Yeah, no, yeah. It was kind of cool. I mean, but I also love Jamie Kennedy's character.
It's true. Yeah. Like, Randy is like my fave.
He's kind of the soul. Ugh. They killed him. But we talked about it in Scream 2. I've already expressed my feelings on the matter.
We've mourned.
We have.
It's been a year.
But as far as the ending went, however, they didn't have as much to work with. Surprisingly. Maybe they were just taking a knee towards the end.
It lost some steam.
Definitely lost some steam. Yeah, yeah. So the original ending had Sydney take out the revealed killer / sibling, Roman, so easily that 3 months later, the production team decided to refilm the entire thing to give them more of a fight, honestly.
Which is fucked because she didn't even kill Roman.
No. I believe she does so. I did see the original ending.
Okay.
Yeah. In the original one that, like, he's... But it's, like, nothing. It's, like, she hides for a little bit and, like, fucking done.
Oh, it's like a... Like killing a stormtrooper.
Yeah, no, it's a lot like that. He, like, has a monologue and then it's, like, and then done. Like, it's stupid.
That is stupid.
Yeah. I saw it's on YouTube. It's fucking dumb. I mean, not that this is too much better.
I was going to say, I mean, the sibling thing, like, I don't know if you have a question about that, but, like, the fact that the director's name was Roman, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lots of illusions there.
Like,
lots
I'm like, of this is such there. A Hollywood fucking movie. Like, anyone who's, like, just, like, a film geek in general, mm-hmm. like there's a lot of little, like, subtle, like...
I wouldn't say subtle, but yes, there's a lot of...
a lot of beating you over the yeah. head with movie references.
Isn't it weird being famous? yeah, definitely. Oh, God. But when Scream 3 was finally submitted to the MPAA... The heat from Columbine resulted in even more requested edits for the already trimmed-down violence of the slasher. So it got so unbelievably frustrating that Wes Craven even considered leaving the horror genre altogether. He did not want anything to do with this anymore.
He was just like, fuck it, I'm out.
I'm done with all this bullshit and pressure because I just want to kill some fucking... Like, that's where he was.
I just want to kill some fucking young adults!
Yeah. But alas... They somehow did finish the film and were ready to deliver the concluding chapter of the Scream series to 2000's audiences across the globe.
When did this movie come out?
Year 2000, baby.
February, mm-hmm. The year 2000.
That's right. But did the sloppiness of the production and heat from a national tragedy affect the film's reception at the box office?
The box office?
The box office, yeah, which is when it opens first and they figure it out, then they add the X. Yeah, yeah, they get it. Yeah, they know, they know. But arguably, yes, it did. So let's figure it out.
All right. Compared to the first two installments in the series, Scream 3 received poor reviews from critics at the time, particularly from our boy Roger Ebert, who called the characters so thin, they're transparent.
He had a way with words.
Shady bitch. Time Out called it a, quote, tiresomely. Thank you, Jesus Christ. Tiresomely overplotted sequel, unquote. And a poor imitation of Craven's previous work, particularly New Nightmare, which is fucked up considering he directed this bitch.
I know, I know.
Variety and the LA Times felt it was a satisfying conclusion, but were surprised by this. Clearly, expectations were low.
They were just like, hey, it ended, and it didn't suck completely. That was the reviews.
The bar is on the fucking floor.
It was that low, yes.
So, despite a lukewarm at best reception from critics, Scream 3 opened at number one in the box office on February 4th in the year 2000.
That's right.
The success wasn't as long-lived, however, as it would gross less than the two installments, despite having a bigger budget and a more star-studded cast.
So, yeah, it didn't make as much money for everyone. It was kind of seemed like, oh, if we keep doing this, this is going to suck.
Yeah, it kind of became a joke.
Mm-hmm. Pre-meme meme.
Huh?
Yes. Yeah, it would have turned into a meme.
I mean, it is currently a meme. Like, Courtney Cox's bangs in this movie are in and of itself a meme.
Oh my god, we'll get to that right now.
Scream 3 would fade away from the spotlight for a while, but receive a major reevaluation in 2017, thanks to the allegations put forth over its own producer, Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
Eesh. So scholars would basically begin to connect the dots from Weinstein's behavior and the themes of Hollywood abuse that are prominent throughout the film. Transactional sex became the main focus for scholars later in Scream 3's reevaluation. And this is somehow very well represented in some good old Letterboxd reviews.
Oh, very heavily represented. There's two things that are represented heavily in these Letterboxd reviews, and you're going to see both of them right now.
Fuck yeah. So Scream 3 has a 2.7 rating out of 5,800 reviews on the platform, which is really fucking low.
Kind of low, yeah.
Josh Lewis gives the film 3 stars, saying, quote, Hollywood is full of criminals flourishing their careers. Executive producer Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, Josh.
Aaron gives the film 3 stars as well, saying, quote, very fitting, it's called Scream, as that's exactly what I did when I saw Gail Weathers' bangs, unquote.
There are so many variations of that joke in like every other Letterboxd review.
It's a very common joke. It's a very common like criticism. It's a very common thing. And I'm like, okay, listen, every toddler has like gone a little too nuts with the scissors and like has like cut off all their hair. Like that's what happened here. So Raul Marquez gave the movie 4 stars in his 2017 review, saying, quote, a horror thriller about women hating Hollywood creeps that blame their actions on their victims. So, not timely at all.
No, not in 2017. Are you kidding me?
No. Mm-mm. And finally, Lex says in their full 3-star review, quote, was it a great movie? No. Was it as bad as everyone on here makes it out to be? I don't think so. This franchise owns my ass, unquote. That's my take.
Yeah.
That is exactly like Lex and I are on the same fucking wavelength.
I'm not going to lie. This franchise owns my ass.
It does.
Yeah, it 100% does.
Like
Scream 5, I'm psyched for. It could suck, but I'm going to be like, I'm seeing it day one. I'm seeing it day
Scream
one.
Scream 5 could be absolute trash, but I'm still going to fucking see it.
I saw Scream 4 day one,
okay,
yes.
I do need to say, are we going to talk about Scream 5 at all?
Not right now, no, but we can talk about
it. No, I just need to mention it real quick. So remember how we mentioned, like, and I think, yeah, Scream 2, I was like, I'll only see Scream 5 if someone finds, like, a buried hidden treasure from Wes Craven beyond the grave saying, this is what I want Scream 5 to look like.
Yeah.
I like how we said that in Scream 2, but now, as we know, that Scream 5 has been written and produced at this point.
Yes.
We're just like, I'm going to fucking see it.
Yeah. No, you gotta understand, guys. We say we have standards. but we don't.
Just look at my dating apps.
Look, you know, every time I see a commercial about a particular type of food, even though I know it's from a shitty place, I still buy the food.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, no, I love, it's wrapped in what kind of fat? What is that, a Cheeto inside? There's a lot of cheese, though.
Fucking soul.
Mm-hmm. Fuck you, Taco Bell. This hurts.
Fuck you, Taco Bell. They're nacho fries, man.
I don't know. It's again, every commercial, I'm still doing it.
So Anyway, after Scream 3, several of the main cast and crew experienced success in their careers, though not as monumental as the prolific slasher. Well, it depends on who you ask, really.
Depends on who you ask, yeah, exactly. Because Courtney Cox would actually have smaller TV and film roles in the years following Scream, but her role as Monica and Friends sort of took priority, as it was one of the biggest shows of all time and didn't conclude until 2004. She was doing okay.
She was doing fine.
She was doing okay. She's kind of a pop cultural icon for four years
like
after
Friends?
Scream. I love Friends. I haven't seen it in a long time, but I grew up watching Friends. Hmm. Like, I would watch it with my parents as it aired, and I would watch it in syndication. But I haven't seen it in probably like 6-7 years. Yeah. You don't like Friends?
Mm-mm.
No?
Oh. I hate Friends. Which is, like, my two longest friendships, mm-hmm. both of them. Love Friends, and every time they like it, they start talking about it, I just have to sit there and be like,
It's hard for me to I think reasonably assess Friends because it is nostalgia.
Absolutely,
thing.
Like I'm if for people who love it, like mm-hmm. if that's your thing, like whatever, like totally, like I get it. Like it's
I was in the single digits just, when I watched Friends.
It was never my thing. That's like me and like the original like Full House, like. You know, I mean, if I watched it again, like without never having seen it, I would have been
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
I kind of feel like Friends definitely fills that particular role because it does touch on things where I'm like, ooh, geez, okay.
Well, it's okay, right?
Yeah.
Or like, if actually, a better example would be like Firefly, which is a very weird reference, but like,
no, Firefly's brilliant.
I fucking love Firefly.
No, but it's like regarded as a well-made show.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I watched it when I was like. Eight.
Exactly. It's a fundamental experience.
Like,
you're right.
You know,
right. Yeah.
And it, but like, I never really thought of any critiques of it until like I was an adult. And people were like, why in a universe where English and Chinese are equally spoken, there are no Asian people or there are no Chinese people?
Mm-hmm. That, wow. Okay. You know what?
Or, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Why are there so many white people in this space cowboy television
with
show?
With Friends, why did it take 9 seasons before, like, let's cast a black character?
Right. Like, those kinds of things where it's like, okay, like, it was like, yes, innovative at the time, Joss Whedon, fucker.
It's Hollywood. They really haven't even stepped up lately. Like, it's just... America. Again, we just saw a storming of the Capitol by a bunch of white folks. So, clearly there's an audience for that. So, but shortly after Scream 3, David Arquette would actually win the WCW World Heavyweight Championship.
What?
While promoting this film, Ready to Rumble, which I also saw a bunch as a kid. The wrestling promotion folded not long after that. Yeah, you know about that?
What?
David Arquette won the WCW World Heavyweight
Championship. He's a twig.
He held it for like 12 days.
He's a twig.
Hollywood. They needed to promote a movie, Alex.
Oh, so he like fake won.
It's wrestling. Everything's fake winning. But like he...
Okay.
But he like won one.
He won one.
Yeah, he won one. Oh, we're quoting, obviously. You can't see that audience. But we're doing quotes right now.
If you have glasses, just write little air quotes next to your glasses.
But it's one of those things where it was seen as a sign of like, oh, this league is crumbling and we need to move over. Like, they're gonna die soon. Yeah, David Arquette
the
won.
Little, like, stick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know what, though? He turned it into a legit wrestling career after a while. He loves wrestling. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. We'll talk about more of that in the Scream 4. But he also managed to snag several roles in unique, almost genre-style films like Eight-Legged Freaks, The Adventures of Shark Boy and Lava Girl, and Hamlet 2. Huh?
I have the most embarrassing confession to make.
What?
So, recently, Dimension Films just released a sequel to Shark Boy and Lava Girl 2. Or Shark Boy and Lava Girl.
Of all the movies, I knew you'd pick that one. I knew you would pick that one.
Called We Could Be Heroes. The only reason that I watched it is Pedro Pascal plays a dilf in it.
Oh, shit. Now I want to... Pedro Pascal is awesome.
He's great.
Dude, okay, did you watch Wonder Woman 84?
No, but I want to. It's on my list. I've been working through his filmography right now.
It's stupid. He's great.
That's
how I would assess it. It's stupid.
So
he's great.
I Twitter watched it in the sense that everyone I follow on Twitter watched it and said this pretty much the same thing. Mm-hmm. But,
Like, this makes no sense, but if anything cannot make sense, the one character that's so outlandish and fucking fiendishly insane...
It's him.
It's entertaining. It's entertaining.
Yeah. So I'm excited to watch that. But no, I watched a PG children's movie. strictly because Pedro Pascal is in it, and he plays a DILF.
I gotta say, though, since I saw him as Oberyn Martell in Game of Thrones, I'm a Pedro... whatever they call Pedro Pascal fans, I'm one of those fucking people.
I have been watching Narcos.
Are they Pascalians, or what are they called?
Pascaltarians.
Pascaltarians. I love that. That's good. Hey, by the way, Narcos is a good show.
It's really good.
It's so good.
It's very good, but I never watched it because normally, like, true crime, like, white-collar crime, like, drug cartel stuff isn't normally, like, my thing.
Yeah.
But then they're like, oh, no, he's in it, and I was... And he's
fucking good.
Yeah, and he fucks, and I was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
It's bad.
I want Pedro Pascal in just everything, dude. That guy's a movie star. He has that movie star.
He's
he,
so good.
And real quick, though, he's from Texas and Orange County.
Yes, he is from Orange County.
He's an Orange County boy. He's an OC boy. I was born in OC, baby. I'm a Riverside person, but I was born in Orange County. Like, we have the same...
the same vibe.
And in his interviews, when he's talking normally, I can see the SoCal OC come out.
I know, I'm just like...
I'm like, I see that. I see the way you're fucking do-do-do. And like, that's the cadence right there. Uh-huh. But he puts on his Chilean accent, and I'm like, fuck. Being everything.
It's true. Well, I'm glad this is now official, pro Pedro Pascal.
This is a pro Pedro Pascal, pro Jennifer Tilly podcast.
Yes, yeah. I was able to shoehorn him in somehow, someway.
Oh, boy. Where was I?
Okay. Aaron Kruger.
No, Nev Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Nev Campbell. She stepped back from the horror genre to focus on more drama films with really, really wildly varying degrees of success. Like, not a lot of, like, hits on the dartboard. but she also met her second husband in a marriage that lasted about 3 years. So that's pretty good.
Is it?
No. Okay, so Aaron Kruger.
Because she kind of just, like, is just, like, a person now.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lie. She was in Skyscraper with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
And she has a successful marriage now.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, she was recently in Skyscraper with Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Man. In like that really horrible action flick where, they're like she and her kid are stuck on like floor 157.
What sucks though is I feel like she has such a distinctive look. She should have been fucking in the stratosphere for like decades.
Yeah. Because she's beautiful.
And she knows how to like act. She can act. She can totally act.
She can act, and, like, literally, she's, like, ageless. Like, I've seen her recently, and I'm just like, you're fucking beautiful.
Even in Scream 4, I'm like, are you still in college?
Because you're pretty.
Oh, she's so pretty. also, Aaron Kruger has perhaps the biggest resume of all, writing huge, huge, huge blockbusters like the Ring franchise. All the Transformers sequels, not the first one, which is actually good. Tim Burton's Dumbo, and the upcoming Top Gun, Maverick.
Tom Burton's Dumbo, I'm just like, ooh.
Tom Burton?
Tim Burton.
Tim Burton's not as, like, visually eloquent brother? Yeah. No, Tom Burton's, I don't think he quite has the Burton genome behind him to really, like, get a good film off the... Yeah. Ooh. Tom Burton's like, he's like really bright colors.
The exact opposite. Yeah. I've had half a bottle of wine. Okay. Go fuck yourself.
Tom Burton's Dumbo, which is actually about an idiot. The dumbest elephant in the circus.
Okay, I get it. I fucked up. God damn it.
Oh, and of course, there's Wes Craven. His biographical musical drama film, Music of the Heart, ended up flopping pretty tremendously.
What?
Yeah.
Is that his passion project?
That was his passion project. It flopped really bad.
What? A musical drama film?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Of course, his output was also significantly lower than earlier films in his career, actually. With films like Red Eye and My Soul to Take being the only ones of any kind of note, really.
I still want to see Red Eye real fucking bad. I've never seen it.
It's not that bad.
But, like, I also love Cillian Murphy.
Oh, my God. He's great. Yeah. He's great. Yeah, Red Eye's not that bad. It's kind of stupid at the end, though.
That's
right. It's weird. It's, like, a good movie, but they try to do a little scream at the end. Like, they try to add that, like, meta kind of weird. Like, hey, look how clever we are. It doesn't work. Because the tone up until that point...
It doesn't match.
Doesn't match. Okay. Doesn't match at all. Yeah. Yeah, we'll cover Red Eye at some point for sure. But after several years, pretty much everyone's careers, except Aaron Kruger, they were in kind of a limbo. But the world around them had changed considerably by this point in time. So social media and the internet fame And the internet fame. So social media and internet fame became a rising force in entertainment in general. And this sparked some new creative ideas that allowed Craven, Krueger, Campbell, Cox, Arquette, and Williamson to take another stab at bringing Ghostface back to the big screen. You like that? It was good, huh? Hold on, Alex. We'll talk about that, though, when we talk about 2011's Scream 4. Very likely next season. But for now, we got a lot to talk about this particular film.
Quick aside, 2011. I distinctly remember seeing posters for Scream 4 walking around.
Talked about this, yes.
Walking around. Good old CSU. Oh. No, CSU Fullerton. I was on my college trip. Oh, you were. Junior right. year of mm-hmm. high school. Because mm-hmm. I was in high school in 2011.
That's right. And I saw this shit on opening day. Me and my friend Alex, who was also a big Scream head. Mm, like we
Scream
were,
head.
That's what the We Hate Movies guys call it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're all Scream heads. Like, it's fucking insane.
They call it Scream heads?
They call themselves Scream heads.
I'm going to start calling myself a Scream head. That's great.
For sure. But, like, I saw Scream 4 opening day. I'm like, listen, I know the third wasn't that good, but I love 1 and 2 so much. And I saw them in theaters. I'm going to see this fucking 1 in theaters. And it was great. But again, it's not Scream 4 right now. We'll save that for later.
We'll save it for later.
Right now, I'm going to get some wine, and we're going to talk about Scream fucking 3. Let's do it. All right, we are back. So, Senorita Webster.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on Scream 3? And why is this so divisive among fans?
Oh my
God. It's divisive.
I think because it's...
It's right down the middle sometimes.
It's so different.
Yeah, it's Scooby-Doo, dude. It's fucking Scooby-Doo. It's a Scooby-Doo slasher to me. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a good way to put it. I just think that, like, I don't know. I don't think it did Sydney's character justice.
I mean, she only had 20 days to shoot, so you're right.
But no, I mean, like, for her character, like, her, like hiding and, like, you know, like, that whole thing. Like, I liked it. Like, I thought it was interesting. But, like, thinking about, like, her as a character, like, she spent movie 1 and movie 2, like, being, like, the super headstrong, like, spooky teenager, you know what I mean? And then, like, by, like, the third movie, I don't know if that's just her being, like, I'm tired of this bullshit, you know what I mean? And being scared. Mm-hmm. And then, to top that off, another reason why I don't like it, by the end of the movie, she just leaves her door open and her gate open, and she's like, I'm not scared anymore. And I'm just like, okay, there's a difference between being careless and cautious.
Mm-hmm. I don't leave my door open or potential gate open.
I've never had all my friends murdered and I still lock my door. You know what I mean?
yeah, exactly. She's been around a lot of death.
My friends weren't all killed in front of me and my first boyfriend didn't try to murder me. Mm-hmm. But...
I'm also not friends with a cop who's been stabbed plenty of times.
At this point, easily going into double digits.
Yeah. It's like, whoa, that's going to be another trip to the doctor's office.
To be fair, I agree with that letterbox review. I do think people are a lot harsher towards this movie. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's just one of those, like, it's, like, popular to make fun of type of thing.
It's not complete shit.
No.
No, and it's not like there's no redeeming qualities of the film.
Is it the weakest entry into the franchise?
100%. Yes. 100%. Not even close.
Yeah. Like, is it the weakest entry? Yes. But is it totally dog shit? No. Like, that's, mm-hmm. I think that's more of a compliment to 1, 2, and 4
mm-hmm.
than it is a put down for 3.
I mean, think about any 3s in horror franchises.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to rank all those, Scream 3 is kind of up there. It's kind of like not, like, it's kind of like up in terms of just like, yeah, I'll watch that.
Yeah.
Like, as opposed to like,
versus hold on a like, second. Okay, like, let's go through them real quick. Friday the 13th Part 3, Hellraiser, Halloween, God. Season of the Witch.
Okay, that's a good one, though.
I agree. Like,
yeah.
I mean...
You know, I turned around on that one a little bit. Yeah.
I've been thinking about it. I'm like, I need to rewatch it because I think we kind of talked a little bit too much mm-hmm. shit. Because, mm-hmm. like, I do actually... It does have quite a fondness. Like, it has a special place in my heart, mm-hmm. Halloween 3. Yeah.
Shit, Army of Darkness was good, too.
See, Army of Darkness.
You know what's the problem is we've been covering too many good 3s. Here we have. Although I will say Friday the 13th Part 3 is, like, not great, but it is, like...
No.
It is iconic for introducing of the hockey mask, but if you're going to take it on the merits...
Hockey mask is in 3. No, 3.
It's in
3,
yeah. But 2 was way better, and 1 was better, too. So, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
In comparison, if we're looking... But also, Friday the 13th has 12 movies. Like, it has mm-hmm. so many entries into that mm-hmm. particular franchise. Mm-hmm.
Child's Play 3.
Not as good. Fucking Army Camp. Like, it was mm-hmm. very silly.
I mean, I like it for the schlockiness, but I will tell you it's not as good a movie
as the previous ones. No, it's fun, mm-hmm. but it's not. Like,
in the similar vein. Fun, but stupid.
This movie, fun, but stupid.
Yeah. No, for sure. And to me, it's like, listen, I don't know if I can say I don't like the movie. I don't like it nearly as much as the other ones. But when mm-hmm. I look at the context of what it is, it's fun. It's not bad. It's bad. It's fun, but in a way that I can appreciate and enjoy myself.
Yeah.
As opposed to being like, God, that was fucking blah, 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 blah. It's like, oh, okay. Just take him out, dude. Leave Schreiber. There you go.
Well, yeah. And then
Jay McCarthy bitching about lines. Okay.
Fucking Jenny McCarthy playing a character named Candy.
The amount of convenience. Also, there is a weakness in writing in this film. That's so apparent.
This is like lazy writing the movie.
It's lazy writing the movie. There's something about like, okay, we need to get to this plot point, so we're going to have David Arquette and Courtney Cox Arquette figure this out in like 2 minutes. And then we're going to go to the next scene.
I watched this last night, by the way. As I was watching it, I was like, that makes no sense. Mm-hmm. That makes no sense. Like, I wish I could like properly bookmark things so I could be like, that makes no sense. That makes absolutely
I had the same experience and I gave up.
But it's like, I gave up. But like very, like, I wasn't even looking. Like,
no, I wasn't looking either.
I was just sitting and like experiencing the movie because mm-hmm. I wasn't trying to be like a super hypercritical bitch about it. And I was just like, oh, okay. Like, I will just sit back, drink my wine, eat my M&Ms, like chill mm-hmm. out, like cover my pillow, like watch this movie and enjoy myself. And as I was watching it, I'm like, that makes no fucking sense.
Yeah. There's lots.
The leaps that you made to come to that conclusion, which is the correct conclusion, but still the leaps.
Somehow you went through all these exact correct assessments to get there.
Assumptions. Yeah. Like, not even assessments, just like assumptions. Like, I'm just like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
I agree. But okay. I agree. And you know what, too? I'm gonna, I watched, again, Scream 1 on, what's today? I watched it on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, the amount of artfulness in that opening scene, Wes Craven was in pure 100% auteur. The best thing he ever shot was the opening of that fucking movie.
The opening of Scream 1?
The right, yeah.
Drew Barrymore, the love of my life.
I know. Oh, my heart. But
pro Jennifer Tilly, pro Drew Barrymore, pro Pedro Pascal.
Pro Pedro Pascal, we haven't covered a horror movie of his yet.
He hasn't been in one.
He's in some vampire one, right? It's not necessarily horror, but it's comedy. There's one that we can actually cover.
What?
Yeah. Well, we'll get to it. I got to find it.
I've seen most of his movies at this point.
You might have missed it then. Like, honestly, yeah, there's one that it's very bloody and we're capable of covering, for sure. Yeah. We'll find it. Go click around. But the thing is, like, the level of cleverness and, like, actual filmmaking ability
uh-huh.
in Scream 1... Like, I couldn't believe these fucking... They were made by the same person. I could not believe it was made by the same fucking person. Like, that's how high up Scream 1 was comparatively.
How the Mighty Fall.
Oh, yeah. Did you find his fucking filmography?
No, the only thing he was in that I could think of was Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
No, there's one with vampires, though.
Hold on.
Yeah, it's like a comedy, but it has horror elements to it.
Oh, Bloodsucking Bastards.
Yes, there you go. Totally possible to cover. I believe it was produced by James Gunn.
Oh, it has Fran Kranz in it. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, perfectly capable of actually covering
it. I have no idea what this is, but mm-hmm. I will absolutely have to, like...
It's right. Pedro Pascal. We got to talk about him.
We have to. We have no other option.
We got him.
I have a problem. Okay.
But yeah, I'm going to say overall... See, the thing is, I kind of like this movie still in its own way, but in a way that I don't respect as much as I respect all the other films in the franchise.
Yes. Again, like I said, like, weakest entry to the franchise. That's not to talk shit necessarily on Scream 3. It's more of a up, like an attaboy to 1, 2, and 4.
Yeah, exactly. They're just so elevated comparatively, it's hard to really...
I was so sure that I was going to hate Scream 4, and I love
I loved it. But they brought back Kevin Williamson. But actually, the writer of this also had a hand in Scream 4.
Yeah.
So, you know, it worked out as much as it needed to. But getting on a more serious note here. The Columbine Massacre actually played a very major role in the revamp of Scream 3.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts on how this particular event in American history affected Scream 3, horror cinema, and entertainment in general, really, at the time? Like, what is it, looking back, like, how do you feel about that?
Okay, so I'm going to quote last podcast on the left here, when I say Columbine was the micro event that changed America, and 9/11 was the macro event that changed America.
100%. 100%.
And I think horror has always been such a great reflection of what's going on, like, on a societal level at large.
People don't realize how punk fucking horror is sometimes. And it totally has these assessments for people like, oh, okay, well, this is my thought process. 100%.
And so I think Columbine really shifted the tone for a lot of horror films, especially, like, obviously post, you know, that, and then obviously subsequently post 9/11. I think you have a little bit of, like, a sweet, well, not a sweet spot, but, like, a fucked up spot between Columbine and 9/11, where you get, like, some very interesting films that do kind of critique high school and, you know, what that means. And high school was hard.
See our Ginger Snaps episode for that one.
Yes. We do talk about that. Ginger Snaps is a prime example of a post-Columbine, pre-9/11
Canadian horror film.
Canadian horror film that has nothing...
Separated from the U.S. See, but this is U.S.-based.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think... because, I mean, I don't know... I was barely in school when Columbine happened. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't have a lot of context, and I don't have a lot of, like, lived experience to be like, oh, this is what school was like pre-Columbine and post. But I do have, like, you know, the knowledge of living my entire life post-Columbine.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, knowing that, like, my dad and I went to the same high school. And in San Diego. And he had off-campus lunch. I didn't.
Oh, shit. You didn't have off-campus lunch?
No.
I had off-campus lunch.
Lucky you.
Fuck, dude.
Yeah. Like, that kind of stuff. Or just, like, things like that.
Yeah.
And I think that... I don't know. Like, I don't... This is a very good question, because I don't have a very succinct answer.
I think it's weird that your default... Because I can pinpoint when my default changed. Your default has more of a magnifying glass.
Right.
Than what I grew up with, which is not the same. Again, our listeners know there's a little disparity between how old we are.
Right.
But we both grew up in distinctly different eras, and yeah, there was a big shift cut down the middle at some point, and it was 9/11 and Columbine back to back, essentially.
Absolutely.
Because
at that point, like, what, Columbine 99, and then...
Two years later.
Yeah, so you were definitely in, like, middle school, if like, your first year of middle school,
when Columbine hit. I remember watching it and waiting for shit to happen, because I was like, what's going to happen next? These many people are dead. Nobody knows who... They're hearing shots.
Yeah.
It was bad.
So I've only known school in a post-9/11... even then, like, even for a 9/11, like, I was in fucking 2001, I was in first grade.
No, yeah, you're not, that's your first year of school.
Yeah, real school. Yeah. Like, I don't even, you know, so I can't, like, I remember it.
It was a lot looser back in the day, I'll tell you what.
But I don't have anything to reference it prior, because, like, all I remember is just, like, the radio playing and my mom being like, oh, shit, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. So for me, when it comes to horror, how it is affected, I look at power dynamics and who runs society. So we talk about this in Scream 2, where there were actual court cases where they brought up footage from Scream and Scream 2, and they're like, look at what these four people were doing.
Right,
because
Scream 2, there were, like, murders attached.
There were murders attached to that one as well. What was a big deal prior to Columbine? You've listened to the last podcast enough to know this. It's the Satanic Panic.
Right,
people in power... Yeah, I understand. A lot of... I'm going to bring this example up right now before I get to the rest of my argument here, but... Or point.
I was going to say, we're not arguing. We're on the same side.
Totally here, but the rest of my point here. One of my colleagues, I remember they were talking about the Fairness Doctrine. And when they were talking about the Fairness Doctrine, they were very Republican. And they were like, that means you got to get points to or time for every different perspective. And I'm like, okay, let me listen to what different perspectives are you talking about.
Okay.
It's like,
side so note for those who don't know, what the fuck is a fairness doctrine?
Oh, yeah. Fairness doctrine is basically, it was a broadcast rule that if you're going to do something from one point of view, you need to devote equal time
to the opposing?
The opposing okay. or alternate point of view.
Okay, I have no idea what that is, so that's why I ask.
Yeah, Reagan got rid of it.
Okay.
And which is why a lot of misinformation continues to this fucking day, because Reagan was a piece of shit, and I'll keep saying that every fucking time we bring him up.
Anti-Reagan.
Anti-Reagan, pro-Jennifer Tilly podcast. Okay, so, I fucking hate that guy. So, but the thing that really threw me off is because he's a Gen Xer, and he came up in the Satanic Panic time.
Okay.
And I remember when he talked about opposing viewpoints, my thought when he was like, well, if I listen to something that's Christian, then that means for 30 minutes, then I have to listen to 30 minutes of something that is, and I thought in my mind, I'm like, something atheist, something secular versus something religious. Like, He's like, I'll have to listen to some Satanist talk.
Satanist?
Yeah, or something about Satan. And okay. I'm like, oh, your default is the God stuff. So okay. to you, the opposite would still be within your ideology.
Right.
And that was the default for essentially everyone who wasn't a goddamn child through the 90s. It was either you're pro-God or pro-devil instead of secular versus religious. That was kind of the through line.
It's so, like, micro, right? Like,
right? But it's a big difference.
Yeah,
it's totally. A very, very big difference. And to me, when I look back at stuff like this, I feel like the power figures in this time for so long tried to make the Satanic Panic a thing, and it worked for a little bit, but it stopped working after a while. This gave a lot of those people a tangible thing to pull from and affect policy, affect business, affect entertainment, and bring those types of thoughts to a tangible way to affect those industries and yeah. those things. And with... Again, like, we've obviously evolved past that. We're to the point where we think, okay, it's either religious or secular. Those are the ends of the spectrum, and you affect things based on those.
And then
premises.
There's a lot of in between.
Yeah, but back then it's Christian or Satan. You're it. With Satan.
And you're either Christian or you're satanic. Mm-hmm. There is no in between.
There is no in between. There's no, what are they, Muslims? No, yeah. That's essentially how it was. This gave a lot of people excuses to do a lot of bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it obviously very negatively affected. But of course, I also believe the world moved on way past those fuckers.
Mm-hmm.
Much quicker, which is why we have Saw movies. And we have post 9/11 torture porn and things like that.
We have our hostels.
Exactly. We have something where people got a little more clever about it, and I think a little too clever for these people to adapt.
Uh-huh.
Like that's and what you're seeing with Scream 3 and a lot of films around the time is people trying to be within the confines of that particular dynamic prior. Mm-hmm. And the wind shifting, like, no, we're way past that now. We're way, way past that now.
This is a really intense question.
I know. But realistically, Columbine affected cinema for as long as it could, and then 9/11 went way hard the other way. But hard enough.
It still
enough.
Does. Like, I mean, to this day, you know? Like, we still have TV shows that have, like, you know, the school shooter episode. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because of Columbine. We still have movies that talk, you know, that have, like, this whole, like, guns hidden in a trench coat type, you mm-hmm. know, like... thing.
But I feel like because these tragedies happened so consecutively,
mm-hmm.
we only had a small portion of time where it was like, we're playing by these rules. But when you brought in like a different religion did this, and that kind of invokes this like, well, how about fuck all religion? And let's look at this from a more comparative standpoint that's kind of based in reality.
Right.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see the horror movies that come out of COVID and the attempted coup.
My God, are you shitting me? That's gonna be some shit.
Yeah.
That's gonna be some shit. Totally. I mean, especially considering the death toll that came from that, or it's coming from that right
now.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, I'm like, one of my people in Los Angeles have COVID. Stay the fuck home.
It's one in three now, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, last I saw.
No.
One in three.
One in three?
I mean, I could be wrong, but from somebody's shared something and I looked at it, I'm like, oh fuck, are you shitting me? Yeah, one in three.
No, because it was one in five like 2 weeks ago.
That was 2 weeks ago, Alex. Yeah.
Fuck.
Hey, I was one of of the three. So yeah,
I know. Statistically, this tracks. There's two of us on this podcast. Yeah, exactly. One of us has had COVID. One of us hasn't. Exactly. Knock on wood. But like,
exactly.
Shit.
Exactly. But yeah, when you see kind of like, this was a catalyst in how things would change. It kind of like, I looked at interviews at the time with Marilyn Manson and other figures that were like, well, why don't you ban Colgate? Or why don't you do these things? Like, they had really good points, but they weren't taking it seriously. So for 2 years, they get to be the person or the people that were beaten over by the media.
Uh-huh.
But then shit like 9/11 happens. It's like, okay, we're going to need to, like, really figure this out. But we'll talk more about that kind of stuff when we do more post-9/11 torture porn episodes,
Woo!
Which I'm sure will be coming at
yeah,
some point.
At yeah, at some point.
Absolutely.
My fucking specialty.
Absolutely. So on a lighter note.
Yeah, please. Jesus Christ.
Now that we got a little heavy there.
Please.
How do you actually feel, though, about the original concept for Scream 3? Do you think it would have worked? Do you think it would have actually worked?
I honestly would have loved that.
Really? Okay.
I think it sounds fun. Like, it just sounds like, again, I don't think it would have been much better. Like, by no stretch of the imagination do I think it would have been a better movie. Mm-hmm. But I think, like, both of them are, like, fun in different ways. Like, mm-hmm. I love the idea of, like, this little cult of, like,
yeah.
horror fanatics being, mm-hmm. like, we want to kill people. You know, like, yeah. led by fucking Matthew Lillard. Like, that just
The
sounds...
fact that Matthew Lillard is involved. Is
yeah,
what makes that badass.
Like, him being the little fucking ringleader sounds mm-hmm. just...
The fucking scar all over his face.
Yeah, he has, like, probably, like, scars and shit, like...
You fucking got you, Sid.
Fucking got you. Like, that would have been great.
Yeah, you know what? It would have been with the guiding hand of Kevin Williamson. And then that makes the biggest difference.
And I think that would have also added an extra, like I can, like, the way, even just in that quote that I read, like, just that one scene where she walks in, she sees everyone dead, and then they all sit up. Like, that is just such an evocative fucking image, right?
In the theater, that would have been the shit.
Yeah. You're seeing it with, like, a bunch of people opening night, and, like, they all sit up, and then everyone in the theater collectively loses their shit.
Yeah,
like,
possible.
That would have been such a fun mm-hmm. movie experience.
Mm-hmm. Again, and would have had, like, a lot more legit. Because remember, he, you know, I never want to shit on the success of people. It's because obviously Aaron Kruger has seen some very big successes, more than the rest of the people involved in this movie.
Right.
But Transformers 2 through 4 sucked fucking balls. I hated those movies.
Fine.
I fucking hate 2, dude. One of the worst midnight experiences I've ever had.
Wow.
The worst.
Maybe, because, like, I've only seen 2 a couple times.
Nah, 2 sucks.
Maybe 1.
2's so bad.
Really?
2's so fucking bad, I can't even watch it.
Hold on. I've seen some of these.
Revenge of the Fallen is the name of 2.
Revenge of the Fallen.
It's got Shia LaBeouf.
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
2009, I was a freshman in high school.
Has Megan Fox in there, too.
My thoughts on movies were probably just like...
I'll watch it again. Watch your heart hurt.
Watch your heart hurt. I remember seeing Dark of the Moon in theaters.
Now, I actually like Dark of the Moon.
Okay.
I did. I like Dark of the Moon way
also,
more than 2.
I saw someone quote Bumblebee the other day, and I had no idea John Cena was a main character in Bumblebee.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
He's a main character.
You know what, though? I stopped watching wrestling after 2001. I fucking love John Cena, though.
Oh, me too.
I do.
Like,
I think he's great.
I have no qualms with it. I just think
in Blockers, he was hilarious.
Funny. I just think it's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, my God. So... What was that? The real concept.
I'm sorry.
Oh, have you seen The Following? It's a TV show.
The Following.
Yeah.
It sounds familiar.
Look it up. Only because the thing with it was produced by Kevin Williamson.
The Following.
The Following. It was produced.
Yes, with Kevin Bacon.
Okay. Was that the TV show?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to know what the cool thing about that show is?
Okay. I've only it. Okay. So an English professor and novelist fixated on Edgar Allan Poe.
Where's what year was that?
So an FBI calls Ryan Hardy, a former agent with physical and emotional scars.
Okay, that's more accurate.
When Joe Carroll, a notorious serial killer he apprehended years earlier, escapes from death row, Carroll, an English professor and a novelist fixated on Edgar Allan Poe, mutilated and killed 14 women. Okay, yes, that's The Following, and I watched like a couple episodes of it, and then I fell off.
Okay, so what you're going to want to know is some of the, since it's produced by Kevin Williamson, some of the aspects of the Scream Theory original idea are incorporated into that film. Or that TV series. Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah. So he actually pulled a lot of stuff from his original concept for Scream 3 and incorporated it into the following. So if you kind of want to see how he would have executed that, imagine the following with Wes Craven's direction and done in about 2 hours.
This movie, or this TV show, has a 58% rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, I didn't say it would have been good. It would have been his vision.
Fair enough.
If any listener wants to see how Williamson would have done it, you actually would need to watch that show to kind of see those concepts a little more fleshed out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's what we would have got for Scream 3.
The following season 4 was canceled by Fox. It was a Fox TV show.
Of course, you said the word canceled, Alex. pissed about
take your pick.
Undeclared. Okay. And Greg the Bunny. God, I'm so mad thinking about those two.
Became a victim of lazy writing, even though in TV not one word, idea, or storyline makes it to screen without being approved and many times demanded by a menagerie of executives.
Okay, so season 1 of The Fall. That's how you know. So this actually we touched on a little bit, but I'd actually like you to expand on this if you can.
Sure.
How do you feel about Scream 3's approach to the rules of a trilogy? How does it take on the concept of a trilogy?
I like that, because in the video with Jamie Kennedy, they're just like, oh, the killer is going to be superhuman. You can't kill him.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do this. I like that they kind of tweaked it in a way that he was impervious to harm, but was still very human.
There's still a tangible way of that happening.
They didn't add a supernatural element to the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is something that I think kind of sets it apart as a slasher film, because there is nothing supernatural. There are no ghosts in this movie. Mm-hmm. You know what
I mean? There's no just walking and disappeared and blah, blah, blah.
Right. There are no monsters. There are no ghosts. In this case, the monsters are people. And they're human fucking people that you can kill.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like that, that was kind of their take on it of saying oh, they're going to be harder to kill. Like I said, Jamie Kennedy's little cameo is the most memorable part.
So good.
Because I've only seen Scream 3 a couple of times. And when I sat down to watch it, that was the only thing I really remembered. And so it was kind of like watching it the first time because I remembered Lee Schreiber dying. Mm-hmm. And I remember Jamie Kennedy's cameo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. Oh, and the scene where Sydney is walking into her house and she's locking everything behind her. And
yeah.
She's a women's crisis counselor. All stuff that very few things. Those are the only three things I really remembered about the movie going into it. Everything else, I was it was experiencing it for the first time. I completely forgot Patrick Dempsey was in the movie. I completely
Me too.
You know what I mean?
Also in the third Transformers movie.
Yes, he was.
Yep. Yeah.
The rules of the trilogy. I think it did its best to kind of stay true without also subverting it. This movie is very subversive. It's very on the nose.
It still has that.
It has
Scream DNA.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah,
it totally does.
It still has the Scream DNA.
It's just dumber.
It's stupid, and it's a little bit more elbow jabby.
That's a good way of I love that shit. It's so elbow jabby. It's jabbing you in the fucking face sometimes.
Well, it's just ha, ha, ha.
Huh? Your fucking cheek got dimples. No, doesn't it?
But that's what the movie is, right? It's just really shoving in your face. Like I said, we were talking about before, the fucking director in this movie is named Roman.
Yep. Ugh.
For those of you who might not be aware, it's obviously, nod to Roman Polanski.
Yeah, it's Polanski. It's Polanski 100%.
There are very few people in Hollywood named Roman.
Mm-hmm. Who are also pieces of shit.
And directors.
And directors. That's right. Oh, that's funny. Me and Ruben had a discussion about that earlier. Me, Ruben, and Adrian actually did.
About Roman Polanski?
Well, we were talking about the because Carlos Mencia did a podcast with Bobby Lee.
Mm.
And Mencia obviously had been canceled because he's a joke-stealing motherfucker.
Right. He's kind of a douche.
Right. And then when I saw the podcast, I'm like, we'll see if he justifies himself. I'm like, oh, no, he's a piece of shit. That was my assessment. But then Ruben made a good point about, the forgiveness aspect of it. A lot of people for the longest time did forgive Polanski and Woody Allen for their discretions. Obviously, now it's not the case.
Right.
But, like, they literally had still free reign for decades for the longest
fucking time. Despite being fucking creepazoids.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. And it's, like, the forgiveness aspect of this whole thing. Like, it varies between person and act. And that's something that you
there's
don't...
a difference between stealing jokes and marrying your daughter.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also one of those things I talk to him about. I'm like, how do I put this? It's, you take into account the act that happened, obviously.
Right.
And at some point, it becomes very, very unforgivable. But it also, unfortunately, not justifiably, but the way people look at this, if the person is talented enough to circumvent that, they'll give them as much leeway and rope as they can.
Yeah, Harvey Weinstein's a perfect fucking example.
Yeah, they'll give them as much until it's too fucking late.
Yeah.
A good example being right now is, I would say, Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Louis C.K.
He was on top of the fucking world.
I also think, though, Louis C.K., not me that I'd ever do it, but with the way the industry works, he has a path to forgiveness. Not necessarily forgiveness, but a path to success.
Redemption.
Not even redemption. A path to success with an asterisk. There's a way to do that. But Carlos Mencia doesn't, even though his crime was way less severe, because he's kind of dumb. And he's not talented in the same way that Louis C.K. is, in the same way that he can be a figure in comedy. He does not have that. But because of that, even though his crime wasn't nearly severe, he's not going to be given that pass.
Interesting. But yeah,
but at some point, I feel like, depending on if Louis C.K. does something super fucking clever, at some point, people are going to be capable of giving him enough of a way to overlook as opposed to forgive.
And that doesn't make it okay.
Does not make it okay at all. But the reality of people being able to, for the sake of entertainment and talent.
People will bend over fucking backwards to make excuses for someone.
100%. Like, 100%. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. I don't like it. But it's one of those things where I mean, know humans.
To an extent, we did it for fucking The Shining.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly the fucking case. You have to be that brilliant to get as much leeway for an extended period of time, even though
we were just like, oh, this was horrible, this was disgusting, like, Stanley Kubrick treated Shelley Duvall like shit and treated all the other actors on the set of The Shining
genuine abuse. Absolutely.
We still were like, but he got a great fucking movie out of it.
And
like,
at the end of the day, that supersedes, not necessarily supersedes,
not
but
supersedes, it doesn't forgive, but it makes you overlook.
It definitely makes you overlook. And also, while it may not supersede for us, remember, think about how smart the average person is, and half the people are dumber
than that.
And when it comes to that level of mass appeal, it's one of those things where, like, unfortunately, even though, again, I would probably never forgive Louis for the kind of thing he put someone else in a situation for. I know a lot of people probably could.
Totally.
Because I saw every fucking season of his goddamn TV show before he got put out there. And I gotta say, the man's a fucking brilliant. He's a talented, stupid motherfucker.
It's the same thing with, like, Bill Cosby. If you did not give a shit about Bill Cosby before, like, everything, like, came out, and then after, suddenly you were, like, really into Bill Cosby, that's a red flag.
That's 100% red flag also.
Same
yes.
thing. If someone, like, suddenly now is just, like, really into Louis C.K., then it's just like, okay.
No. You were into Louis C.K. back before 2004. And like, then you figure it out from there.
Yeah.
And then you had to make your assessment.
Yeah, exactly.
But to me, those kind of figures are one brilliant take away from giving enough of a pass where they're not off the market anymore.
But then, like, to challenge that, I guess, but, like, for example, like, the Weinsteins, like, they aren't talented. They're just powerful.
No, 100%. That's the difference, though. That's why talent is a big figure in that. That's why Polanski got away with it for decades.
Yeah.
For decades while living in exile.
Yeah.
And Matt Damon and fucking Ben Affleck clapped for him at an Academy Awards ceremony.
Uh-huh. Well, like, let's not even get into the Afflecks. Like.
No. But still, though, think about that. Like, figures that powerful in Hollywood were able to be like, you did, wrongly, whatever, but they were able to solidify
Oversee
that belief.
It. Or,
yeah,
like, overlook. 100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that freedom will last, but the freedom is a possibility,
totally.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, or at least to exist in Hollywood to some degree. Like, you know, Anthony coming in hot with the heavy-hitting questions.
But another thing, too, think about, again, it's going to get pretty big. Think about the amount of forgiveness a lot of people who adhere to the policies and ideals of Trump, what they're willing to forgive. to have somebody on their side be in the limelight and reflect their values and entertain them, really, because that's what it is.
Yeah, or even 100%. Just, or even trying to make like the argument where it's like, well, for me, it was about business. For me, it was about
economics. Oh, you can make any fucking excuse you like, want.
You're still bending over backwards and licking a boot at the same time.
100%, 100%. And again, it takes a level of being able to play the game that other figures might not have caught on to. One of those being, as I referenced before, Mencia, because he's stupid. He's just genuinely fucking dumb. Louis C.K. is not dumb.
Yeah.
He's not dumb. And he's played his card 100% right till this point. At some point, there's going to be an opportunity. However people react to it, we'll see.
Yeah.
But, again, these figures, there's a clear distinction between who can manage it and who can't.
Mm-hmm.
And who can manage it goes for a long way before society moves past them. 100%. Okay. And unfortunately, you deal with it until people can't deal with it anymore.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Which, not that I agree with that, but that's just kind of how people are. And, like,
that's how people are. That's, again, I don't agree with it. But that's how people are.
And I think kind of our, not responsibility, but kind of like our, I don't know, something we can do is at least be able to challenge those perspectives when we come across them. Because like, I think it's hard to be like, okay, well, I don't forgive this.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you do, but why do you?
Again, it goes back to our Shining episode.
Right.
Regardless of the quality or whatever the work or the output is, there's always going to be that asterisk. There's always going to be that asterisk.
Right.
It's just going to be there.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you deal with it or you don't. It can deter your enjoyment of something, but it depends on whether you knew that or not going into it. Really.
Yeah. You're not going to like go out of your way to watch something that like a known abuser did.
A known abuser. I like the way you put that 100%. Because you're not. Yeah. I'm not. Yeah. I mean, and you shouldn't.
You shouldn't.
You shouldn't. Absolutely I'm not. But you might unwittingly fall prey to the brilliance of that, unfortunately. Because when I, you know, if you look at Louis's output in his show, it's literally an auteur that was about to become an auteur, and then he got revealed.
Well,
he was
the
right
thing.
There.
I'm not like a huge Louis C.K. fan. Like, mm-hmm. I'm like, he's fine, but mm-hmm. like, I watched like a couple, like I think mm-hmm. a special maybe mm-hmm. before everything like kind of came out. So I like, am like.
But you were in his market back then. That's the thing. No, but think about that.
Truly, no.
The amount of prestige he got for his output mm-hmm. prior to things coming out was huge. He was going to be able to make indie to blockbuster films. That was his path.
Yeah.
And something happened. That's all. They caught him right before he got really big.
Yeah.
That's essentially what fucking happened.
Yeah, so don't be a fucking creep.
Don't be a creep. Don't be a goddamn creep. But if you're a creep, be a goddamn talented creep and hope the world kind of didn't move fast enough. That's what it is.
That's unfortunately the reality. That's the worst advice.
No, it's not advice. That's just how the world works.
It's stupid.
It's stupid. I agree it's dumb. But again, think of the average person and how easily it is to cajole these fucking people to like storm a building and like do shit like that.
To fucking storm the Capitol.
And you gotta be like, well, there's a lot of them, so holy shit.
By the way, since the last time we've recorded, so much shit has happened. Trump has been impeached for the second time.
It happens every fucking time, dude.
The Capitol got stormed.
By the time we upload this tomorrow, it's gonna be a new fucking thing. You're like, what he said? What about who? What did he mean? Holy shit.
He got banned from every social media mm-hmm. platform known to fucking man.
His wife showed what? It's gonna be just whatever. Whatever, dude. Like, that's...
The world's moving very fast right now.
That's by design, Alex, if you don't pay attention. You know?
Doesn't mean I have to fucking like it.
No, you don't have to like it at all. And I don't.
I just like my horror.
This is why I told everyone, heads up, this is actually as much fun and shit talking as we're going to do. Because this involves literally massacre and Hollywood abuse.
Well,
there's a lot that goes into this film. It addresses it in this fucking film.
This is a surprisingly deep cut of a conversation to have in Scream
3. For Scream 3, the third installment, traditionally threes always suck. Fuck it.
The shittiest Scream, like, now, iteration.
I literally knew this when I was writing Scream 2. I'm like, fuck, because I was doing the research.
I remember.
And I remember the research leading into 3. I'm like, I have to stop here. And I think I mentioned it in the episode.
You did.
I'm going to stop here because what is coming afterwards yeah. is a very broad.
We mentioned yeah. Columbine in these in Scream 2.
Mm-hmm. Like, we did because it's...
this. Like, I want to say, like, we've talked about a lot of like politics. We've talked about a lot of like other shit, like in other episodes. I think this is the most we've talked about politics and or just like societal problems at large.
See, but you know the thing is though, it surprisingly fits this fucking movie.
It does. It's,
down to the production.
Yeah,
down
I agree.
To who put executive producer fucking Harvey Weinstein on the credits after the fucking director. Down that fucking far. That's why we gotta talk about it.
Fuck Harvey Weinstein.
I agree. Fuck Harvey Weinstein. I love you still to this day, Jennifer Tilly. And you know what? I'm watching every goddamn Pedro Pascal film I can.
Oh, see, boy. Chili.
Oh. Anyways, what's a better question? I think we covered that, the next one that I was going to talk about. We did. No, we totally talked about that. Okay, so let's skip that. Why do you think Scream 3 wasn't as successful as the first two films, both critically and commercially? And what could have changed
to
make this film more successful?
That is such a hard question. Like, there's so much to change.
Kevin Williamson.
I mean, yeah.
To me, Kevin Williamson. That's who you need.
Yeah, add Kevin Williamson. Probably, like... a school massacre so that we could get the original plot. Like, there's a lot
more security guards.
Matthew Lillard, like,
ugh. I don't know, maybe I think the Hollywood approach was a bad approach, but I do remember Don Mancini saying, and we talked about this in The Bride of Chucky. We did. Again, I'm gonna keep referencing our old episodes, but he always talked about every director has to make their Hollywood film.
Mm.
And when he talks about Wes Craven, he's like, New Nightmare Scream 3. Every director has that desire in them to reflect the reality that they...
Yeah.
That becomes their default.
But what's so fucked up is, like, his reflection, Wes Craven's, was New Nightmare.
That was his first reflection. The industry changed a lot since then.
It's and
true. He didn't work with the Weinsteins before that.
Huh?
When being exposed to the Weinsteins... Look how much more he had to say. Look how much more he had to say.
Talk about the private screening room in Scream 3, by the way.
Right?
Like, I'm like, this has Weinstein's, like, nasty little hands mm-hmm. all over this shit.
No, I think,
watching
seriously, there's some...
Watching it in retrospect, yeah. like, watching it in a post-2017, post-Weinstein, like,
yeah.
conviction, like, society, like, seeing that shit, I'm like, this is, like, obviously, like, about Hollywood, like, skeeviness.
And obviously the creative talent knew. They clearly knew.
Here's the thing. Like, what I wouldn't give to be able to watch this movie in the year 2000 and like experience it in the way where like all of that was meant to be humorous. Like, it was supposed to be like an open secret. Like, it was like, we know this is a thing, but like we don't really know, so we're gonna laugh and pretend it's funny. When now in 2021 we're fucking watching it and being like, this is a fucking cry for help.
Not to get back to our little deeper points here, but isn't it amazing how in an era with high to the max level Christian values in our establishment,
mm-hmm.
this shit was like, oh, funny. And when things are a lot more secular and introspective now we're like, oh, shit.
Well, yeah, because it's introspective. People are watching it and being like, I don't think
but
that...
the values espoused prior to that are very... assumed to be virtuous.
Mm.
They're supposed to be beyond the secular. There's supposed to be a way that leads to forgiveness and leads to a better life. Realistically, that just suppressed a lot of the stuff to the point where it became almost humorous. And now that things are a lot more open and discussions out there, you kind of see the hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very big thing. It shows you how bullshit those values are.
It shows you that the values are just altogether bullshit.
They're a facade. They're a goddamn facade for the same fucking power grabs that we can now identify a little easier.
A little bit. I will say, like, to the defense of social media, like, there's a, like, that has done a huge service in that sense. Like, being able to connect the dots and, like, see, like, community interaction and, mm-hmm. you know, like, that's helped a lot.
The only shitty part is it tells you that there's a lot more dots beyond what you thought there were dots
for. Oh, absolutely.
100%.
Like, how many times have I just had to, like, be like, okay, that is not a can of worms that, like, I'm just...
I learned the meta for this. I didn't think this was an aspect
of it. It's like a whole fucking thing. I'm like, yeah. I'm just going to close my phone. I'm going to put it down. I'm going to walk away.
Oh, boy. Okay, I'm going to skip this one. We talked about
Elliot
now.
No, go for it.
So... to bring this back to our normal format, because this is oddly one of our deepest episodes for Scream 3 of all films.
Well, I'm wine drunk.
What is the killer of the film for you?
I should have thought of this beforehand. I usually have these prepared. Do you have yours?
I believe it is Dion Richmond getting thrown off the goddamn balcony and cracking his fucking neck.
Oh.
Yeah.
For me, I think it's... Oh, fuck. I would say Lee Schreiber is one.
It's very effective, his kill.
His is pretty effective. I take it back. Jenny McCarthy.
I love her meta.
No, just the scene in general where, I mean, yeah, her being thrown.
Using over, the fucking props.
Well, no, her more so just being thrown over like a glass covered door, like that, like, yes, that. But like, I think more so than that, like her kill of the film, like the scene leading up to it, where it's just like the rows of ghost face costumes and there's like a real ghost face like standing
yes,
among
and
them.
Yes, it pops out.
So good. So fucking good. And then also like she's calling the fucking, excuse me, she's calling the security and she has to go through like the whole menu and like security.
Yeah,
and like and like the menu for six is just like, if you need to reach like security or are having an emergency, press six. And it's just like, oh, six is the emergency?
Yeah, emergencies right now. Okay. Yeah, I gotta go through the whole fucking
menu.
Spiel.
Yeah. If you want to hear our craft services for the day, press two. Like, that was what it was. It was like craft services was two. Like, it was very stupid.
Oh, you're right. Okay, that's also a good one.
Yeah.
That's also a good one. Dumbest kill is the goddamn lighter in the gas. And like, stupid. Fucking stupid.
The one who saved is the
one
who
can smell
the gas.
Oh my god, they need light.
The gas. So I, right. Jesus, I inhaled too quick.
Oh, you're getting too hot about this. You're getting too hot about
this. No, he was just like the one, like he was just like, oh, I can't read this letter, so let me just flick open my oddly convenient Zippo lighter.
Because I'm the one that has, and everybody walked out of the goddamn set.
The house. It wasn't even a set.
It's a house.
It's a fucking house.
You're right.
Also,
oh boy.
like, to cause that explosion, he must have had the gas on forever. Someone must have been able to smell that.
They
should have
smelled that shit.
Oh, I'm so angry.
Mad. I'm so mad.
That was the dumbest
I'm
kill.
So mad.
For sure.
Okay, we should choose a question for dumbest kill of the film. Because that was fun.
Yes.
So, what would you rate Scream 3 out of 5 Carrie Fisher cameos?
Fuck. So I wanted to just say 5 because it's Carrie Fisher.
I know.
Just because you put Carrie Fisher cameos, but we know that's not the answer.
That's not how it works. That's not how
2 and
works.
A half.
2.5 down the middle?
Yeah.
You know, 2.5.
Yeah.
I was going to give it 2, but I'm like, the thing is, I still had fun. Like, that's that. At the end of the day, I still had fun.
It's dumb, but it's fun. I will
it's
say
so
the
dumb.
End is about 5 minutes too long. Like, I was just like, let's go.
I agree.
I kept, like, I was like, let's wrap it up.
That and being a Los Angeles resident, there's a little bit of bias there for me.
Also, just gonna, like, just a little relationship advice for the fellas out there. Don't propose to your significant other with a book about the murder of all your friends.
Mm-hmm. And then cut out their work.
I mean, that's whatever. I'm more just like, here's a book, sweetheart, about like all your friends getting murdered. Open it and oh, lo and behold, it's a fucking ring. Like that.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Yeah. I agree, Alex.
That's my relationship advice from a very single human being.
What a time. Okay. Well, hey, we fucking did it.
Holy shit.
Fucking did it.
That was a really lot.
That was an oddly profound episode on Scream 3 of all
right?
things.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Of course. And then next week we have a movie I have no idea. I'm going in blind for this one.
So, that was Scream 3 from 2000, directed by Wes Craven.
Yeah.
Next week we are talking about a movie that I watched during my new Halloween, new scary movie for every day of October thing that I did. I fucking loved it. Very subversive. If you like Scream, you're gonna like this movie. I'm so excited to cover it. It's been recommended to me so many times. It's very fun. Little emotional. Tugs at your heartstrings a little bit.
I'm excited. Okay. I know nothing about this.
Yeah, I know you know nothing, but I really liked it. I'm very excited to cover it. We will be resuming our previous release schedule, so we will have that out for you on Wednesday.
Yes. Day jobs, I'm sorry.
We are so, so sorry. Day jobs, right? Mm-hmm. But for 2021, we do plan on maintaining our Wednesday release schedule. Absolutely, so yeah. Just, you know, continue being on the lookout for that. And if you want to get updates so you're not surprised by us releasing episodes on Friday suddenly, you can find us on social media. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. And then if you would like to find Anthony, you may find him on Twitter and Instagram at Herulean Hustler. And then if you would like to see me tweet or talk more about Pedro Pascal, you can find me on Twitter at Ghost Coffee Shop. And I'm also on Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
My boy, Pedro Pascal.
All I do at this point.
Fellow Latinos. Every time I see it, I'm just like, yeah.
Represent.
Brown boys, yeah.
And if you like what you heard, please, please, please consider giving us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It means the fucking world to us. Truly, 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 I cannot overemphasize that enough. It's, mm-hmm. You guys are the fucking best, and this is the best part of my week. So
I let Alex know every time there's a new 5-star review, and it's always 5, so keep the 5 going.
So thank you so much, everyone, for listening, and have a great couple of days. Stay safe. If you're in Los Angeles, you heard it here, 1 in 3 people have COVID, so stay the fuck home if you can, and wear a goddamn mask.
Absolutely.
So until then, don't wander onto any abandoned sets for a movie based off of real life murders.
Don't trust directors named Roman.
Also that.
Adios.
Bye, guys.